To remind all participants, this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Would you like me to do a roll call, Julie?
Yes, please, Gwen. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the 29th of September, GCOT call, and on the call we have Avery Doria, Ron Andruff, Eric Branner-Williams, Rolf Ulrich Knoben, and Ray Fassett. And for staff, we have Liz Gaster, Julie Headland, and Glenda Saint-Cherie. Thank you very much. Over to you, Ray.
Okay. Thank you, Glenn. All right. So the agenda today...
Before we get to the agenda, this is Avery. Can I say something?
Oh, yeah. Avery, go ahead.
Okay.
Please.
Yeah. I sent an email message from the wrong address, and then I sent it from the right address, and I was going to mention this when we did the SOI DOI stuff, but since we weren't doing that, I mean when we did the SOI for the group, not the SOI topic, I was going to mention, and the note that I sent said, as I will not be able to accept the fact that we are working on this at all, and I'm referring to the SOI doc at this time, let alone accept some of the changes proposed by ICANN staff, I will no longer be able to function as a neutral vice chair, and while I will remain in the group, I hereby resign my role as vice chair. So I tried to say that 15 minutes before the meeting, as soon as I saw the note Julie sent with the document, with the staff's changes to SOI, but sending it from the wrong address, it didn't get through, so I wanted to start this meeting with my resignation because I can no longer be neutral. Thank you.
Okay. So does anybody want to update their disclosure? Okay. Thank you, Avery. Okay, so there is, and I'm, okay, so here is a document from Julie. I apologize, I've not read it. I think that's the one you're referring to, Avery.
Yep.
Is that correct? Okay. All right, so let me just try and decipher a little here, okay? So attached is the SOI document with suggested changes. Okay, so now are we all starting on the same page that the SOI rules of procedure that were initially approved by the work team and booted up to the OSC and then were eventually not approved by the council? Are we all starting from the same place there?
I thought they had been approved by the council. This is Aubrey.
Ray, this is Julie. If I could clarify.
Yeah, clarify, yeah.
The SOI procedures were partially approved by the GNSO Council. Section 5.3.3 was not approved. That's the section that pertains to the actual content of a statement of interest. That is the questions that would be asked. That section has been held in abeyance, and the previous procedures have been applicable until that section is clarified by this work team, and the clarifications relate to the issue concerning a list of contracted parties, concern that Christina Rosette and Steve Metallitz had raised.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me start with that. Now, Avery, can I ask you, since if I understood your resignation statement correctly, of the vice chair, not from the work team, I might add, is it correct that you're resigning over a portion of the SOI that has not yet been approved by the council?
No. To make it clear, as I say, I'm resigning because I'm no longer neutral on the topic. Now, the issues I'm no longer neutral on are twofold. One of them is, I believe the only pending issue is the staff giving the list of contractors and the means of that there was no issue about the rest of the content wording of the SOI. So I don't believe, now, I thought that it all had been approved except for that 5.4 chunk. I don't believe that all of the SOI DOI issue is open, but even if it is, I strongly disagree with the changes being proposed by the staff, and therefore would not be a neutral participant in that discussion.
Okay, so
it's a twofold thing. And if we decide that no, this was never approved by the council, therefore they don't need to send it back to the OSC, therefore, you know, it's still an open subject on the thing. I guess that's a procedural ruling that, you know, there's not that much to say about, so I dispute it. But it's really, I'm not neutral on the topic at all, and I don't deserve to be a neutral vice chair.
All right, so I have another just procedural question here that maybe some staff members on the call can help me with. Let me just try and word this question as carefully as I can, okay? Because I don't want it misinterpreted. Is there some documentation somewhere that says a vice chair it has to be remain neutral?
Can I mention why?
Well, no, not why. I'm trying to apply this to other groups as well. You know,
right.
not just our own. I'm trying to understand in the whole scheme of things. You know, are vice chairs to be resigning because they feel they have an opinion? I'm throwing that question out.
And can I explain why I think I had to? In terms of exactly your question, a vice chair, their function is to assist the chair, and I think in that role, no, they probably can't have an opinion. However, if halfway through a meeting the vice chair needs to step in as chair, as happened at our last meeting, at that point they have the obligation of neutrality.
Yeah, I think that at that point, I agree. So when the chair, or when the vice, well, but at the point that you would have to take over the chair's role, is when you would say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Just like I asked you last meeting, I asked you the question, are you able to do that? And I think that's what every chair does. So I'm just asking. I think Wolf is out there, and I don't mean to hog the mic here.
Well, it's Wolf speaking, so I also would like to ask Avery. So I understood you first, you know, that you may resign from the vice chair just on that topic, so to be not neutral about that topic. But if you could be, and I see that you can be neutral with regard to other topics, so you may step in again as vice chair. So I wouldn't see any problem for that topic that you step down for that topic as vice chair. But with regard to others, so I don't see any problem to step in again. Or is that too complicated?
No, I don't think it is. Go ahead, Aubrey,
I thought it was an atomic thing. Either one was in a neutral posture or one wasn't. I never gave it any thought, actually, on whether it was a issue-by-issue thing. And I think this is actually an interesting topic in and of itself.
So here's my issue. I want to explain my issue here, okay? I think that we're a productive work team. And I think that we've gained some degree of legitimacy out there with others who have examined our work. And I think Aubrey, as the vice chair, adds to that credibility and legitimacy of what we're doing. And as the chair of this work team, I would find it perhaps damaging or harmful, not unrecoverable, I don't mind you. I don't want to, you know, I want anybody to lead the wrong way, but nonetheless, more harmful than not by this action.
Yeah.
And Aubrey is obviously free to resign her position if that's what she feels compelled to do, and I'm not arguing or not willing to accept it. I'm just stating, looking at the bigger picture, I think, Aubrey, I would like you to consider the fact that it's not in the maybe perhaps not in the best interest of our work team as a total, and I'm just asking you to consider that. I know that this letter came out recently. I know that your initial reaction came right away after that, and I'm just asking you to consider that. Consider the bigger picture here.
May I add something? Wolf speaking.
Yes.
So I did not. At the end, understand, Avi, why you would like to resign, really. What I was faced here was, okay, Judy was sending out a paper with regards to some elements from staff side regarding staff's position with regard to participation and disclosures of interest. So that paper is on the table. So we could have different opinions on that. That's what I understand. So I really do not understand why this paper is that the main reason that you are going to resign. So that's what I don't understand.
Yes. It's that I've always felt that when in a chair or even a vice chair role, while it was okay, and sometimes in the vice chair, it's been fuzzier for me, where it's okay for chair or vice chair to state their opinion and
yeah.
then to let the discussion move on,
mm-hmm.
that they can't become combatants or
mm-hmm.
champions or whatever
mm-hmm.
for a position
mm-hmm.
on the topic. On this one, I intend to be, or I want to be, call it a combatant, call it a champion, call it whatever, for a particular
mm-hmm.
point of view
mm-hmm.
that I don't back down on, unless I'm convinced that I'm wrong. Whereas, as a vice chair, I put out my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
If the rest of the group, other than me, says, yeah, we like it, then as vice chair, I figure I need to go along with the majority because a chair or a vice chair should not be breaking the consensus.
Mm-hmm.
On this one, I want to put myself in the position of breaking the consensus
mm-hmm.
if we get to a point where I haven't been, you know, convinced that I'm wrong.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah. I have a suggestion of how to proceed here, okay? My suggestion is we acknowledge the fact that Avery has stated a deep concern, that we appreciate the concern, we understand the concern, she doesn't want to commingle different responsibilities, which we all respect and appreciate. I will suggest that we discuss what the issues are before formally accepting Avery's resignation of her vice chair position. Let's have the discussion. And if Avery still feels compelled at next week's meetings, I believe we are scheduled to have a meeting next week, compelled, then it will be accepted.
No.
Okay. So for me, as long as I don't function in the vice chair at all today.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. Yes, accepted.
Okay. Ray, this is Julie. I just want to point out that we actually didn't have a call scheduled as yet for next week, and the policy staff are actually in meetings next week.
That's right. I did see that note. So, okay, so 2 weeks. So you got two weeks.
Right.
So you're going to be, after today, Aubrey, you will unfortunately still be the vice chair for at least two more weeks.
Okay. So I will accept it, and I thank you. I thought it was just going to be easy to say I quit.
No, not that easy.
That insofar as this topic is concerned, I am not vice chair.
That is accepted.
Okay, yes.
And we will allow you to perhaps change your mind on that as well.
Yeah.
Ray, if I can get in the queue.
Yes, please, Eric.
Thank you. This is Eric Werner Williams. Avery's point is only half of the issue of distinguishing between advocacy and non-advocacy by a person with a particular responsibility. So Avery can, as an individual, arrive at an awareness that she has is engaged in advocacy and then seek to end the conflict of interest between being in this case, a vice chair and being an advocate for a position. The other aspect of this, though, is the response of the chair or vice chair or any other person with a particular responsibility to the statement from one or more members of the group that person is now engaging in advocacy and should consider resigning, or the group should consider removing the person from the responsibility, from the particular responsibility during the consideration of the issue for which that person has taken an advocacy position. So I think it's a two-part thing. One is the Avery resigns. The other is someone says, Avery, you should resign. And both of these need to be taken, addressed with some degree of clarity. Thank you. And Avery, I wasn't picking on you, honestly.
No, No, I see your point, and yes, there is a
okay, yeah, okay. That I think that is a fair point, and it's noted for the for the recording, for the record. If there are not any, Ron Andruff is not on the call.
I thought he was.
You are.
Yeah, Ron.
I'm sorry. I just was getting off mute. I am on the call, Chair.
Okay, yeah. Great. Okay. I suppose you don't have anything to add to what's already been said on this particular topic.
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay. Thanks. All right, with that said, let's jump into this document. This is Chapter 5.0, Statements of Disclosures of Interest. Does everybody have a copy of it? Do they have it open? Are we able to all follow along together here?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so first of all, I want to, again, state for the public record that what we see here in terms of edits from staff are at the request of me as the chair to receive such edits, suggestions, et cetera. So I just want to make sure that is clarified. We sought it and asked for it, so that's why we have it. Now, more to the substance of it, and I believe I did so as the chair representing the interests of the work team, whether people agree or not, that was the intention. So now where we're going here is what in, under B, where it starts to speak about relevant party. I'm just going to go ahead and read it for the record so anybody listening can kind of follow along. It says, relevant party, an individual who participates as a member of a GNSO group, in new edited language as follows, ICANN staff assigned to support a GNSO group are not, quote, relevant parties, end quote, for the purposes of this section. And I am making a presumption that is that sentence, Avery, that you are having difficulty with.
Actually, to be honest, I really only have problems with one word in it.
Okay.
And that's the word not between R and relative parties, relevant parties.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so I think, let me just cut right to the high level. Again, I'm also trying to think about people that might be listening to this. I think this, at a high level, if I can use a metaphor, if that's the right term, metaphor, I think, Avery, where you sit, and if I'm putting words in your mouth, you just speak up, is, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If others have to, that are participating in this, have to submit, this is one level. So one level is sort of procedural. So if others in the work group have to do it, then why should ICANN staff not have to? That's maybe a question. And then the second one is, let's be realistic. Those in ICANN staff support roles may, in fact, along the way, influence the group, and therefore, for that reason, should be completing a statement of interest. Are those pretty much the two prongs that are causing you discomfort, Aubrey?
Primarily the second is that there's no such thing as a fully disinterested party, no matter how much they set themselves off to be that way, and the disclosure of interest, the statement of interest, does indeed help in that.
Okay.
The goose and gander, yes, I believe that is a general principle, but the prime motivation is the deeper significance of what it means to participate, and the fact that we all participate in our own roles and responsibilities. And so, just like one could argue, well, the chair's neutral, right? The chair's mandated to be neutral. So their interests really don't matter anymore because they're participating neutrally. And no, the chair's participating in a different role and responsibility, and that neutrality is part of their role and responsibility, but we still need statements or declarations of interest. Likewise with the staff. They are participants. They have a different role and responsibility than the chair, the vice chair, participants, observers, guests, what all have you, that all have different roles and responsibilities, but that they do have roles and responsibilities and are members. So the fact that their roles and responsibilities are different does not relieve them of possible conflict of interest in the advice and help they offer.
Okay, I'm going to go to the group. Ron, do you have anything to at this point? Or
Yes, I do.
Please, go ahead.
Thank you. I think the, Avery's point is well taken in the sense that, we're trying to derive principles here that will manage and guide the way forward with ICANN, the institution. So all of that makes sense to that degree. Where I found myself siding with the argument last week was on the when Avi used the example of her the different hats she wears in different environments. But I've been thinking a lot about that over the course of the last week, and the question that came to my mind, and then perhaps this might help kind of resolve this a little bit, is that I would ask how many full-time staff members or staff support people who are on the calls with us, how many are moonlighting on other jobs? And if the answer comes back, well, 99.9% of the staff are all, 100% with ICANN, and that's what they do, then I would think that the ICANN confidentiality agreements and the employment contracts that they sign would provide for the issue that we're trying to address here, and that is that someone is actually has a very specific agenda, and but they're not disclosing for whom they are actually doing that work. So what we're trying to get to is a place where people will disclose an interest if something new happens, or they will make a statement of interest that shows exactly where they stand, so that we can all understand when someone's speaking for whom they're speaking. So the just to put that into a nutshell, it's really for me. I'm starting to think that staff, very few staff or support staff that we have on these calls are moonlighting. So therefore, they are obligated by contract with ICANN as it stands today. So I don't see why we would have to force them to fill out an SOI or a DOI.
Can I comment? This is Avery. Can I comment?
Yes.
Okay.
Avery, then Eric.
And me then.
And then
Okay, I can wait until everyone has gone.
Okay.
I wanted to comment on the notion of moonlighting and that.
Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead, Avery.
The comment on moonlighting is that it is not just job for hire. It could indeed be volunteer activities. It could be any number of things. So it isn't just that. But even if it owes only 1 in 100, that basically has to say in response to, so has anybody changed their SOI? And the SOI from staff was all, I am ICANN staff, and that's all I care about. And period. So that's in there. Even if it's only 1 in 100 that says, yeah, I'm also participating as a volunteer in the IGF working group on democracy in multi-stakeholder organizations, and or I also organize events for this kind of other group. If it's only 1 in 100, it's easy. They only have to do it, but we need to hear from that one. Thank you.
Okay, let me just capsulize that. So I'm just staying with your example. I'm not debating it. I'm just trying to understand it. Okay, so if there are 100 instances and 1 out of 100, 1%, you're suggesting that it's to the benefit to capture that, make sure that one is captured, even though the other 99. Are nowhere near what the issue is with why we're discussing this at all.
Yes.
Even if it's just one.
As I say, if it's 99 that say ICANN is my only interest in terms of any of the topics being spoken here, but there's one who does have a broader interest, I believe for the public good of what we are doing, that interest needs to be stated. And it's especially true of anyone that would be a contractor within ICANN staff.
Okay, that's okay. I understand it. Thank you. Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I differ with Avery because I'm concerned about the promotion of ICANN staff to participants. And I have a different example. I'm going to again go to the security area, where the security staff, for a variety of reasons, have or attempt to use some degree of expertise and standing based upon a claim of expertise to influence the actions of working teams, working groups, which arise in the past out of the constituency process and in the present out of the work team formation. When an ICANN staffer in a security position who is supporting a security-related work team offers an opinion on something which is fundamentally an issue before the stakeholders, I don't want that opinion to be taken as anything other than the statement of opinion by a non-stakeholder. So my concern here is promoting ICANN staff inadvertently into the position of becoming participants in the stakeholder sense. And I think that I've spoken to this sufficiently long. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Understood. And I do remember that email that you sent, so I'm able to myself provide context to what you're saying. You have a way of writing sometimes colorful emails that can stick in somebody's memory, so thank you. Wolf.
Yes, thank you, Ray, and others. So I'm coming a little bit from a different side than Eric did, but maybe I approach the same point he was pointing on. Though that is for me is also the question: what does it mean participation, and is staff a participant in that sense? And I would like to come back to that what I stated one or two meetings before. So my understanding is the biggest, for me, the biggest impact or the biggest influence participants or anybody, let me say anybody who participates or is attending a meeting of a working team could be shown by voting. So And there is a kind of voting in each team. And on the council level, we have votes, and in this case, although the chair is not a neutral guy because he is entitled to vote, and also in other groups we can have votings about the chairmanship and about other things as well. So for me, that is the point: how can we, or who can really impact the result of the definitely the result of what is the outcome of such a group, and that's by voting. So that's my understanding, and I don't see that in that way that staff should be appointed, should take this role to get the voting right. So and they don't have it at the time being. So when I read the working groups, this document about the working groups, which was which was done by the other group, so the other functions from staff are described in that way, that he should support the working teams in a neutral manner. So that's outlined in that sense. So in that respect, I cannot couldn't agree to Ari. Thank you.
If there are not any other comments.
I have one, Ray, if I may.
Yes,
Ron.
Please, Ron. Go ahead.
I think there was one distinction that Avery made in the clarification to my comment that I made a note of, and that was consultants. ICANN staff, we always refer to staff and consultants kind of in one as one group. We throw them all into one box. But perhaps we can, that's the distinguishing factor, that pursuant to what Wolf just, the statement Wolf just made about how staff have been defined, perhaps we say that staff are covered under the employment agreement, but consultants would need to be filling in a DOI and also respond to, or SOI, and respond to the DOI question when the meetings begin. Consultants being the type of person that may be doing the moonlighting, whereas staff would be more obligated to their primary position. Would that be a way forward, Aubrey, that might give you more comfort?
Only half. As I say, certainly that's better than nothing, and perhaps there is a middle way to find wording on staff also, because I do believe that there are occasions that staff do participate in other organizations, either on behalf of, and I mean, I've seen it, either on behalf of ICANN or in their own personal standing as all of us. I mean, all of us participate here as volunteers. Some of us may be getting paid for by a job, but I think by and large that ends up being half or even less than half, and the rest are just participating in their own capacity as volunteers because they care about the subject. I've participated in other things like the IGF, like its multi-stakeholder advisory group, where there have been ICANN staff members, not necessarily members of this policy group we're talking about now, be that as it may, who have participated in their individual capacity, seriously participating in multi-stakeholder governance issues that would reverberate inside the work we're doing. So I'm not comfortable. I could possibly be comfortable with something that said that in consultants, yes, and in case any staff member has an outside interest that bears any effect on that. For example, if they are participating in the IGF or the OECD or any of the other many organizations that I can send staffers to participate, and very often the rules of those organizations posit them as volunteers participating in their individual capacity. So given that reality, given that I've seen that reality, it's the reverse of the reality I'm in, where I'm a sometimes contractor for the UN who participates in this in my individual capacity. And, you know, the UN doesn't pay me to do it. So if there was some way to make an intermediate statement that sort of said, okay, you know, we don't need a blank statement from all of them saying, I work for ICANN, I pledge my loyalty to ICANN, and I don't care about anything outside what ICANN tells me to care about. We don't necessarily need to see a statement like that. But I think we do need to see a statement. And as to Eric's point of elevating them to participants, his example shows that they are participants, and they do have interests that are wider than the interests of this. And it's not a promoting them to participants. It's a recognizing that within their role and responsibility, while their participation modality may be different, they are participating.
All right. Well, I think that's a good. I think that's a good lead-in to section 5.2.3 of this document. Which, again, for those listening, I'm going to go ahead and read this, where it says, ICANN staff assigned to support a GNSO group are expected to work in the interest of ICANN and the broader interests of the Internet community and not for any other purpose or interest. So I interpret that to mean that it is, in fact, declaring that ICANN staff, now it doesn't say consultants here, I don't know if we need to massage that, however, but it is saying outright that ICANN staff support assigned to a GNSO council or GNSO group are expected to work in the interest of ICANN.
Okay.
In other words, that's their interest. So I want to toss that out. And
I've got my hand up again.
Me too.
You want to go first?
Actually, it's Liz. I'd like to jump into it.
I just want to make one more statement, then let the discussion flow. In that, I've heard a couple of times that we've heard about ICANN staff being neutral. I'm reading that, and I'm not getting neutral out of that. I'm reading that ICANN staff support assigned to a GNSO group are to work in the interest of ICANN and the broader interests of the Internet community. But I'm not saying neutral. That's my point. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, was I first?
We got Aubrey, we've got Liz.
And we got Eric.
And me, Wolf.
Heard Wolf? Aubrey and Eric and just...
Okay, I'm not on your handy-dandy thing there, so I can't
None
see
None of us
that.
Have it. We're just pretending that we have it.
Oh, okay. All right, kind of like I'm pretending I have a phone. Good.
Right.
All right. Okay, I'll have to go ahead,
okay.
And who's next after that?
That was me, Eric, Liz,
and me,
Wolf.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Go ahead.
If I was vice chair and I was telling you the order in which people's names came up, that's what I would have said.
Okay. Fair enough.
Thanks.
In terms of this statement, the key phrase here is broader interest of the Internet community. When I'm participating at the IETF, I believe I'm doing it as a volunteer for the broader interest of the Internet community. When I'm participating in the IGF, though I get paid there, I believe I'm doing it in the broader interest of the Internet community. When I participate in ICANN, I'm doing it. Yet each of these has a different notion of what the broader interest of the community might be. And as such, that then becomes, again, an interest. In other words, when I participate in things, if I'm participating in an IETF work group that has a certain charter, and I'm participating in the policy group here, I need to declare that I'm paying attention to both. You know, if I'm doing, because those two have interests that may indeed impact each other. Now, the IETF doesn't ask me what my interests are, but ICANN does. And so, therefore, it's important to say. So that's why I think, and the broader interest. If somebody was working purely in the interest of ICANN, which means they're following orders and they're doing nothing beyond what upper management tells them to do, you know, or what they, as a group sitting around the table, decide is in the best interest of ICANN, perhaps we're in that area. But as soon as we bring in broader interest of the Internet community, we're in a very broad field. That's what we're all doing.
All right. I just want to make sure I understand that. So I'm sorry, but so you're saying that if it simply was ICANN staff assigned to support a GNSO group are expected to work in the interest of ICANN and not for any other purpose or interest, you would be feeling more comfortable.
Yeah, I would still have to add a clause.
All right, but you would be feeling more comfortable. So we're starting there, we're moving. Okay, next is Eric, I believe.
Yeah, it was Eric, Liz, and then Wolf.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Non-Chair, non-co-chair. What I'm concerned with is the issue of the chair or any member of the work team detecting and causing to be discarded the attempt by a staff member, and seriously, not the kind that we're working with here, but staff who don't have self-imposed or management-imposed limitations on their conduct. And I'm still thinking of the security area. So I'm trying to solve the problem of how we ensure that no matter how boisterous or strong-willed a staff person may be, how hard they attempt to impose their will on a group, that there is the means for the least presuming participant in the group to raise the flag that this is coming from a non-participant and need not be taken into account, that the staff don't vote, they don't form consensus, they don't formally influence the outcome of any question, and the chair may discard their input at any point, or any member of the work team may raise the issue that non-participants are engaged in advocacy within the work team. So that's the issue that I'm really trying to ensure that there is a mechanism to discard improper advocacy. I think that's all I wanted to say on this issue.
All right, so I just want to interject, and I know Wolf is up next, or Liz. I need to interject here. I want to answer that a little bit. So in my own experience here with this work team, for example, I feel very comfortable that staff has only provided opinion when asked. So I think that there is an obligation inherent with the chair to do exactly what you just said, Eric, where I'm already familiar because maybe because this is all new and staff is being instructed and there's good training practices in place right now because it's all getting off the ground. But I'm pretty comfortable staff support has been instructed to only be in a support capacity to these groups. Now, I wasn't involved in the security group, and I don't know what's going on there. But in my world here with this work team, I feel really comfortable about the fact that they've been assigned and told your role is to support and only provide opinion when asked. Because that is my experience. I'm just being honest. Meanwhile, when I have asked, it has come in, and then I think it's up to the chair at that point to decide is it substantive to what the work team is discussing, because it was asked of the group. Okay, go ahead, Eric.
Hey, Ray, it's Liz. I'd really like to go next now if I could.
Okay, Liz, please go ahead.
And I'd really like to respond to both Aubrey and Eric.
Okay.
And this is my personal opinion. I think the legal staff has legal issues in addition to some of the I believe your issues are substantive. I think that they're more maybe policy issues than legal. So I just want to state my personal opinion with the recognition that legal may come back, I think, with some legal issues we also have to wrestle with. But so my personal opinion, though, is that both Aubrey and Eric have very I agree with both of you, I think. And let me say what I think is happening here. I think we're all bringing in our heads to this discussion different examples of staff behavior that, and consultant behavior for that matter, that are illustrating what we're saying. And Ray, I think you made actually very good description when you said, well, I'm not seeing it on this call. And frankly, I think, you know, knowing Julie as I do and my efforts and Ken's and Rob's, in this context, we are probably really attempting to be neutral and find the right path with the group. But I want to recognize a couple of other situations that are inevitable that I think there's nuances to this that I think, and I think my overall message is that I'd like to go back to legal and express some of my takeaways from this discussion and see whether we can add them to, you know, Sam's deliberations actually and come up with a way forward. Eric, in your case, you know, I'm well aware that there are security experts hired by ICANN, both internal employees, if you will, and probably consultants too, who are hired sort of to be security experts. And so when they get on a call, and they've been on calls that I've staffed too, you know, they have opinions that are pretty strong, pretty overt, and I would consider advocacy on, you know, essentially any level. They're attempting to play a role on staff that is different, at least from the role that Julie and I typically at least attempt to play, whether we're successful at playing it all the time or, you know, whether latent or subconscious or semi-conscious viewpoints or ethical views come into play is, you know, conceivable. But I think I really understand this issue of how staff wears different hats at different times and that they're amorphous and that they're not even necessarily clear and that consultants behave similarly. We have consultants that we hire to be neutral or attempt to be sort of neutral policy staff, like what I think we're trying to do for the most part, but we also have consultants who we hire collectively as an organization who are experts. So I do believe the solution lies in addressing these issues in a more nuanced or granular way than what we've proposed to date.
This is Ray. I hear that. Thank you, Liz. I'm just trying to point out here that the edits that we got here in this document does not go there and say that staff assigned to GNSO groups are to be neutral. It says, quite frankly, that they're expected to work in the interest of ICANN, and then now understanding Aubrey's language that she has a problem with, which is the and the broader interest. So just discounting that for a minute, I'm concerned about what does somebody new to ICANN say? What are they looking at? How do they understand ICANN staff's role? Well, they got statement of interest for everybody else, and they're looking at the ICANN staff people, and they want to understand what their interests are, and we're looking for something in the rules of procedure to be able to educate any third party that can go, oh, I understand, ICANN staff, they are working in the interest of ICANN. It's not that they're expected to work neutrally. I imagine it can go any different ways. Like you said, in this group, it has been very neutral. In other groups, it may not. In all cases, If you decide that, if you
development context, I think.
If you decide that the staff support for this group should be neutral, that's your decision, in the interest of ICANN. If there's another group going on that feels that it's different, it doesn't. It's still in the interest of ICANN. Now that's what this language is saying to me, and I'm not seeing neutral here. I think it's saying quite clearly any third party that staff assigned are expected to work in the interest of ICANN, and you know, full stop. And I think everybody could understand that. So anyway, with that said, I think I don't. Who's up next here?
Wolf.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, just let me step into to that point. Well, when I read this paragraph exemption, well, I understand it's made by lawyers, so it's lawyers' language. So to find a way out in case there is some difficulty with it. So I also understand the formulation are expected to. It's really weak. Well, I'm also expected to do something and to take some position. So, but if not, what does it mean? So it doesn't say, okay, they really do it, but they are just expected to do that. So that's what I understand is lawyer's language, and it's a little bit weak to me as well. So I would like to see that this text is consistent with what was worked out in the working group guidelines, which have already been accepted by the council. And in the guidelines, there is this paragraph about the different functions of the participants of working teams, chair, vice chair, staff, and staff as well. And there is outlined that the staff has two functions. The one is secretariat, and the other one is a support functions, providing assistance in a neutral manner. So why not really to do it that way and to make it compliant with that text? So also in this regard, I can really understand that somebody has some problems with the text just proposed by staff.
Where is that, Wolf, where you found language that already spoke to staff?
That's in the working group guidelines. You know,
our working group guidelines?
No, that is what the other team of the PPSC did.
Oh.
You know, the working group guidelines. So they drafted a document which was accepted, and that's in this one of these paragraphs. It's very detailed described.
All right, that raises another point that I did want to raise, which is, you know, is this under our venue? Is what we're discussing staff support to a working group under our venue? I mean, this is the rules of procedure, the Genocidal Council rules of procedure. I could make a case that we shouldn't be narrowing this discussion to as it pertains to staff support to the GNSO Council, because there's this other group out there that is vetting out and working diligently on how working groups should be handled. So I'm gonna go ahead and toss that out there, Aubrey.
Yeah. What happened? And interesting problem to solve. What happened is that other group. Since this group was developing an omnibus SOI DOI set of procedures, that other group accepted as, and especially since they were released in time, accepted for inclusion the SOI DOI rules as had been decided by this group, so that we would have one common set of SOI DOI rules for anything GNSO did. So if we decide to sort of get specific, although I suppose we could add clauses that sort of said, and in the case of the GNSO Council, and in the case of, and therefore within them make them specific and not negatively applicable to the other working groups. In fact, these issues came up not in terms of the GNSO Council, but in terms of other working groups.
Yeah, so my question is what Wolf read, has that been accepted, adopted, or what have you, or did they walk away from it until...
No, that's what basically brought me back to my first question. That group, I believe, I mean, I have to go back and check all my facts, but that group, I believe, accepted that the work for SOI, DOI, by this committee was done, except for the one paragraph on... the list of people who had contracts with ICANN. but that all the rest of it was done. So they accepted for inclusion by reference the work that this group had done as their SOI DOI, because we had spoken much earlier between the groups. I don't know if you remember, but it was months ago, and about did we need to have two, did we need to go back and forth, and what they decided to do was basically accept this group's determination on SOI DOI and include it by reference. I think it was included by reference, although I think Ken at one point did discuss including it by whole, and I don't remember what happened in that respect.
Well, Ray, this is Julie. If I could add to that explanation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Aubrey, that's absolutely correct. I just would make a note that so the working group guidelines, once they are approved by the council and they are not at this stage yet approved, that working group is still proceeding to make some changes, and there's a recent version they're discussing, I believe. Wolf, I'm sure, could clarify this as well, but you're absolutely right. They do include these SOI, DOI procedures by reference, and when the working group guidelines are complete, I believe they will be included as a chapter in the GNSO operating procedures, along with the work that's being done by the PDP working group as well, which also is not complete. So all of these things, I think, are germane to the work of the GNSO operating procedures, which is under the aegis of this particular work team, or at least had been as assigned by the OSC.
Okay, so if I understand right, the good news here, if we want to call it that, is the fact that the working groups is not yet completed either. If nothing's been, I know, not adopted yet by the council, right? And in our case, the SOI has not yet been adopted by the council, barring Avery's little distinction that maybe parts have that haven't been. What I'm trying to get to here is a point that Wolf has raised here, which I think is pretty significant. We have a contradiction going on. We have here saying that staff is expected to work in the interest of ICANN, and we have another work team that has language that says ICANN staff is to be acting neutral. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. We've got to have resolution to this. And I think we need to go back to staff and say, okay, look, we've got a contradiction here, what appears to be a contradiction. Which is it?
Avery, we may want to have a joint group meeting of the two groups that are talking about the same issues as well.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah, this is Liz. I agree. I think it should be in some way conveyed to the group and not as a... I mean, the staff's happy to play the liaison in terms of conveying to the group and, a joint call, but not, to try to resolve it in any way.
But I think we all can acknowledge in this work team that there is a contradiction. Is that? Do we have consensus on that?
Agreed.
Okay. All right. So now it's a matter of how do we remedy the situation. And what I'm hearing is it to be a good idea to invite that other work team into a call or them invite us, however it goes, so we can flesh out the contradiction.
Yeah, I would suggest the two chairs talk.
Yeah, this is Ron. I was thinking the same thing. I'm not sure if there's a whole lot of dialogue that has to happen here other than more of a point of clarification. And if the two chairs talk and say, there's a lot of areas of lack of clarity, then, in fact, we could conjoin the two working teams.
What would the two chairs do here? And would we just be acknowledging the fact that there's a conflict, a contradiction?
If I can raise my hand again. I think you guys would, first of all, talk about, the fact that there's an apparent, for example, I didn't shout out that I agreed in this consensus because I'd really have to go back and read the exact words to know for sure whether there is a full-blown a contradiction or whether it is in nuance space. So that's one thing I would need to check. Second, you know, working for the benefit of ICANN, you know, can indeed be interpreted as neutrality being one way it's done in working groups. So there's lots of stuff. But basically, I would think that the two of you would talk, and then if you felt that there was something that could beneficially be resolved by the two groups together, you're the ones that are empowered to schedule meetings and would be able to schedule a meeting of the two groups together to work on this as an issue.
Okay, that's pretty good direction. Who is the chair of that work team, may I ask?
It's, oh, my goodness.
I'm sorry?
I remember, but the name is slipping me at the moment, and I'm very embarrassed.
It was Jay Scott.
Yes, Jay Scott.
And then, you know, Jeff Newman is the PPSD chair, because I think that group might be done. But
No, they're not, actually, Liz, because I just saw a message that went to the group that they're to consider the latest version of the guidelines. So I think they're not done.
Yeah, Marika sent us a message.
Right. Right.
And so you can send the language about the paste the staff role.
I'll send the language as Avery had suggested. Thanks, Avery, to this group, and also confirm with Marika, who is the chair, and so you know can all see what the language is and compare the two.
Marika's the chair.
No,
Marika would know. I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, Jay
okay.
Scott is definitely the chair of that one.
Jay Scott. Okay, and someone's going to send around the language that Wolf was citing.
Yeah, this is Julie Ray. I will send the language around.
Wonderful.
But both the language and I'll compare it. Send the comparison language from the SOI document.
In fact, we have a meeting of that team at 18:30 UTC today.
The one with Jay Scott.
Yes, indeed. I was just going to call.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I was just going to. I took myself off mute to tell you that. Thanks, Avery.
Okay. Well, I think that. Do you plan? Are you going to be on that call, Avery? And do you plan on raising this?
I was going to be on that call. I thought.
Are you going to resign first or anything? Or.
Oh, thank you very much. Now you're going to pick on me.
I'm sorry.
Quite all right. I deserve it. So that meeting is in less than an hour. I could certainly bring it up as coming out of this meeting is that there's a whole Hebrew word I really want to use, but there's a whole issue over SOIs, DOIs, and the role of staff neutral or non-neutral, that we may have a contradiction between their work and their work.
Yeah, I'm curious where that language came from for that work team. I mean, did that language come from staff as well? You know, in other words, or did they just write that language on their own?
Yeah.
And you know, I'm just kind of curious because we can certainly say the source of our language has come from ICANN staff. You know, and that means what? Legal, right? So we all know that. So or legal at least looked at it and blessed it and all that. So my point, so that we know our source. So I'm curious also what their source is. Was it
for that language was a combination of the people in the group themselves, of which I was a member, and the contribution from staff, in this case, I think mostly in the suggestions from Ken Bauer, who was helping us. I think it was Ken on this one, who was helping us in terms of writing it all down.
Okay.
And finding errors in our logic and such as that, and suggesting solutions, but, you know.
So, yeah, he was a staff person early on, and then it shifted over to Marika.
I think the bulk of the writing was done by Ken.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, so we've got a plan of action here, and we've identified the issue. There are multiple layers of the issue here going on. But first way I think to tackle it is let's understand, you know, the genesis of the two different approaches, you know, and go from there. Does that seem like reasonable there, everybody?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So we're on the hour here. Just a few more minutes for our next call as well. We've you know, there's this issue going on with regards to remaining. It's going on, this lingering issue of how disclosures of interest are being handled in practice. And in talking to Chuck Gomes, I guess what's really part of the problem here is that the language itself is reading to mean that people are expected to write their disclosure of interest, to document their disclosure of interest. I was under the impression that that was not the intention. The intention was simply to poll it or disclose it, verbally disclose it at the time of a meeting, etc. So am I correct in what I thought the intention was supposed to be in disclosure of interest?
I don't think so, Mrs. Aubrey.
Yeah, and this is Ron. I'll get in the queue.
Ron, please go ahead.
I think it's unfortunate that this happened this way, because there seems to be a lot of confusion, and you and Avi and I exchanged some emails on it last week, or I guess maybe this week, I'm not sure what it was.
Yeah.
But the long and the short of it is that I always saw the SOI as a written document that's been enshrined within ICANN, and anyone can look at my SOI anytime they want. My DOI is a disclosure of an interest that has arisen as of yesterday. Something came up, and now we're on a call, and I'm about to speak. So prior to the, as the roll is called, just as you did today, does anyone have a disclosure of interest? No one responds, and then it gets enshrined. The chair says there was no disclosures of interest. If you recall, the genesis of this was to really try to get a little more transparency within the ICANN community. It has nothing to do with anybody who's standing outside the community, but those of us who are inside the community, many being consultants, one day they're working for this client, the next day they're working for another. And so what we were trying to do as a work team was to establish a kind of rule of law that would enable anyone to be the sheriff if they found that someone was being untrue about their disclosures or untrue about their status. Then they could call that person on it, and then we would have some remedies to clarify that. And the point was that that sheriff had no bullets in the gun. The only weapon that he had was one of embarrassment. So we were hoping that through this action of actually calling for disclosures of interest before the meeting would happen, that people would say, yes, I have one, knowing that if they didn't make that disclosure, they could well be caught at some future point, and that embarrassment would be too much for them, also loss of credibility. So the idea of the DOI being a written form, to me, makes absolutely zero sense. Why would we have an SOI written and a DOI written? It's the same, would be the same document. So a statement is something that is a much longer-term issue, longer view about what who I am and what I'm doing. And my DOI reflects directly, my verbal DOI reflects directly on the topics we're discussing today. So I don't know how this thing went sideways. It's a shame it went sideways. But right now, having a written DOI and a written SOI is complicated, makes no sense, and I don't want to have anything to do with it in terms of having my name attached to that, because that was not where I was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Fair enough. Yeah, Aubrey?
Yeah, I tend to see the history of its genesis in this group totally differently. And, in fact, remember very clearly our conversations where people were talking about being able to declare at a meeting, I have my SOI and DOI on file. And that therefore, because people were complaining that the process of everybody having to declare DOIs every time they got up to talk, especially at live meetings, would be overburdensome. And that the difference between SOI and DOI was not one of temporality in terms of, you know, oh, all of a sudden this just came up, but rather was a difference of quality, in that the SOI defined a general set of my work, who I work for, et cetera, whereas the DOI was specifically related to issues, not to participating in a work group. And I most definitely remember us as having discussed them and talking about them being written and talking about there being possibilities of how both of them would be, you know, displayed on websites and whatever. So I have a completely different recall than Ron on this.
Abby, with respect, we can go back and we can dig up all of the documentation, all of the transcripts, but the point here was simply this, and you hit a very critical point, and that was when we speak at the open microphone, and that was the point, that it would be a verbal declaration. I'm about to speak on. That's where we got into that issue.
Well,
but the written part was always another story.
With all due respect, we have to go back because we both remember it differently. So
I just want to say, as the chair,
we need to go back.
I recall Ron's recollection. I just want to say, as the chair, it is what I recall. Recall Ron's recollection. Wolf, is there anything you have to add on that?
Yeah, I'd like to.
No. For me, it's not. Nothing else. Well, I would. Be happy if you could compare the text, both text, next time, and then
yes, I think that's right, and I agree with Aubrey that should be done. I do agree with that.
Ray, can you hear me?
Eric, yes.
Oh, thank you. I actually think that Rod's memory is correct, but going back to the original documents is a good idea. However, Aubrey, you phrased what I consider the for me anyway, the central issue here, which is that the SOI is a general document, and the questions in the SOI are general in nature. So the idea of having an SOI for each group, for each activity, seems to me is that variance with the generality of the question suggested in Section 533, which hasn't been accepted, but they are the model. And it's also at odds with the very notion of the SOI being a general declaration of interest and the DOI being, whether it's temporal or specific in terms of substantive issue, a different kind of declaration. Thank you.
Okay, so I think we all have our little bits of slightly maybe different variations of recollection, but at a high level, again, I do recall Ron's recollection of what the purpose was. Now, with that said, the language that somehow got produced, again, according to Chuck, and you know how detailed Chuck is, the language itself that was adopted by the council reads to be that the declaration of interest is, in fact, to be documented. That's what it reads. So I think, you know, quite honestly, you know, I try not to get too bogged down, I mean, almost to a fault here, I admit, on procedure too much. But, you know, if we're, you know, more or less as a group willing to say, you know, maybe that the language as it is, as was adopted, was not the intent, while there is one person obviously that not clear on that point, you know,
I disagree.
You disagree. And then there's also this secondary issue. Well, it's already been adopted, so therefore it's outside the scope of our work team and should go into this new committee that is about reviewing implementation. So we start to spiral into different levels of issues. And, of course, we'll go back and check the record, and we'll try and decipher what the work team was trying, what its intent was as best we can, although we don't really keep minutes and, you know, letter to the law language so that we can, you know, point to. We'll do the best we can to try and interpret what did we mean when we did it. You know, that was then, this is now. But what's complicated it, folks, is the fact that they have been adopted. They understand this. It's been adopted. So now the question becomes, is it within the GCOT's venue or is it within the venue of this implementation review work team, you see?
Can I add a wrinkle?
Yeah, add a wrinkle.
The NCSG was very upset at me and other participants in this for having allowed the whole stuff to go through on, you know, the non-tangible interests. And without having fought harder. So if topics are reopened from a decided thing, I believe as an NCSG chair exec committee, I'd have to bring up reviewing other aspects of it. So now we have three aspects. We have Eric's aspect of SOIs for all working groups. We have DOIs related to the intangibles of being a professor. And we have the written DOI. So we're starting to accumulate quite a few things that people would like to question if we reopen this.
This is Ron. When the queue opens?
Go ahead, Ron.
It comes back to the question you asked just now. Do we have, is this in our purview to actually address this now? And the answer is that it didn't go out the way we intended. So, yes, we have it is within our purview because this was not the intent of the majority of the working team. Now, with regard to the other elements, my understanding was always, again, SOI, I have one on file. So I have one on file for this working team, and I didn't file a new one for the VI working group. It's the same one. Nothing had changed. So I didn't file a new document. The document was on file. SOI, I would then verbally bring up. So I think Eric's issue is less of an issue. The issue that we had a different intent, and we can go back and look at the record and clarify that, is the reason that we can bring this forward and ask the GNSO to make that that amendment. But the third element, in terms of whether or not a professor should, you know, that whole thing, right now this new document or this new draft actually shows is recommending we take that out. But I could go either way with that, but from my point of view, I don't think that we're reopening the whole thing for a brand new debate. I think that the issue was that we submitted something and it didn't get translated appropriately. Thank you.
And as you know, I disagree with that.
Mm-hmm. That's noted.
And in fact, I'd like to say that we all, and I mean, I've often let things go through and I've read it afterwards and said, oh my, how did that happen? But we all did review the documents. And we all did say, okay.
Yeah,
so
but with all due respect, sometimes we're too close. When I write a document, I have to put it on the side for 3 or 4 days and then come back and look at it again because I'm so close to the document, I don't read it anymore. I don't see those things.
But
you know?
The point is we did send it on.
Well,
agreed.
And I'd love to see a change. Don't get me wrong. I love the idea of not writing them, although I think they're entertaining to write. But I think it's fine to change it. I just think that, you know, we have to take responsibility. We approved the document we sent forward. We read it. We sent it to the OSC. OSC read it, discussed it, sent some stuff back to us. We sent some stuff back to them. Yes, we're ready, go. And then it got sent on. So to say, you know, to say that somebody, and I wonder who the somebody is, somebody didn't represent what we said correctly, it's us. We read it, we reviewed it, we said it was okay, and we said send it on.
Yeah,
now,
but I can also
standing
say,
up for staff
yeah.
and saying they sent what we wanted.
Well, I know, but I could also say that taking responsibility means if we've identified that the intent is not what we intended, then that is taking responsibility. And right now what this situation is causing some difficulties in progressing on really the substance of work being done. It's impacting that. And, you know, so there's a level of responsibility. There's different levels of responsibility here. And while we could punt it, now we could punt it to another group and say, okay, well, we messed up and now you guys fix it. Or can we...
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's a silly little paragraph. It takes 5 minutes to write. It's no big deal. Again, as with the staff issue of not wanting to be able to write an SOI, I start to wonder, why don't people want to write these paragraphs? What are they afraid of? And so what I'm suggesting is let the policy play out as it's been written and approved, and then in time we'll see what the practice is. The other group will see what the practice is.
Wait, which policy? Which policy are you referring to?
The written DOI.
All right, but we're already getting the feedback on what it is.
Well, that's because, I mean, but it's just,
if
you know, why don't people want to write it?
No, but, Avery, it's cumbersome. Our objective was not to add layers of difficulty to the dialogue that happens to create ICANN policy. Our objective was to streamline the rules of procedure under the new House environment. So now we've got an overly cumbersome element that people are confused about. They don't understand the difference between a written SOI and a written DOI. Why are we, the guys who created it, agreeing to allow that community confusion to exist and allow it to play out? It makes zero sense. Zero sense. An error happened. It's about correcting the error. And I think when the error is corrected, everyone will be very grateful and we'll move on and get on to the work at hand. I think we're splitting hairs here to say, well, let's just let it play out and see how it goes.
Okay.
I mean, it makes no sense.
All right.
Okay.
So I think,
wait a minute, please.
I think I've got two positions here. Okay, I understand. Ron, I understand Aubrey. I'd like to hear Wolf, and I'd like to hear Eric's positions. Wolf, please.
I'm sorry. So,
it's okay.
I don't have a different view than Ron is. So I could follow what Ron was saying.
All right. So you're following Ron's viewpoint.
Yes.
Eric?
Same.
I'm sorry?
The same.
All right. I've not at one time in this entire work team taken anything to a vote. And, boy, I'd like to keep that record intact. I'm going to throw out the notion that of the really the active members of this work team on this call today, I'm hearing 3 out of 4 in favor of reviewing this work based on the fact that the language did not reflect the original intent. I will qualify this, that I will ask Julie, I suppose. ICANN staff can tell me who to go back and do the best they can while understanding. We did not purposely, the idea is not to keep such documented records to go back in time and try to, weigh one. This isn't a legal thing. This, okay? We tried to keep the best records we could. So I'm just going to ask for a cursory look to see if there was anything that absolutely indicates that we absolutely meant to have DOIs documented as well as SOIs. And absent an ability to find something that absolutely states in the affirmative that we meant for DOIs to be documented in addition to SOIs, absent our ability to find that, I'm going to ask that this work team move forward and discuss how to repair this and get language in front of the OSC for them to review, and perhaps then from there get in front of the council to get this remedied.
I will probably object, especially since you put it in the language of absolute positive,
yes,
no doubt language. And,
yes.
And so you've made it almost an impossible task. You've
and my reason for that...
And
yeah,
prove that they were wrong.
Yeah, my reason for that is because we're not keeping records for the purpose of this, what we're looking to do here, which is to go back.
I'll probably maintain an objection.
Right, I just wanted to explain my reason for staying it that way. Cause it's,
this is why I knew I had to quit as vice chair.
Okay. Anyway, so with that, I'm putting that forward, and I'm looking. I have heard one objection. There were 3 others on the call. Does anyone else have an issue with proceeding that way?
No, I do not.
Do we all understand that if, by chance, Julie comes back with a discussion transcript of some kind or something that says, look, guys, you said this was to be documented, then we understand the ramification of that?
It is what it is. The point here, I think, has been well discussed, I have respect for Aubrey's dissenting position, but I think at the end of the day, if we're going to try to streamline the activities here of work teams, this is the only way for us to be able to do it. So that's the next step for us. And if you agree with that, Chair, then I agree we'll go forward in that way.
Great, thank you very much. So I just want to point out one last thing, and I'm going to try and adjourn this call here. Which is, when Aubrey, when I asked you to be requested you to be the vice chair, I never made that request thinking that you couldn't have opinions. It never even crossed my mind, to be perfectly honest with you. So the fact that you're dissenting or showing opinion or strong opinion, opposite of maybe someone else who might have the opposite strong opinion. I'm not sure. I'm still not getting the bearing on why you feel you need to. I'm asking you to think about it. You have explained yourself. You think that the vice chair has to be neutral at all times.
No, I didn't say that.
Okay. All right. Well, I just want you to think about it.
The vice chair can express an opinion but not champion a point of view. not argue, not get combative.
Where's it, if I just heard of ICANN today and never heard of it before, and I wanted to understand how these processes work, working groups, chairs, vice chairs, where is that written down?
It's actually pretty much written down in the working group requirements.
No, where, what you just said, that the vice chair is allowed to have an opinion but not champion. Where is that?
So that is actually chairs and vice chairs. I mean, that's something that we did document, I believe, in the working group guidelines. And that's just practice that I've brought in from other places, that one has to find a balance between a
right.
chair being totally neutral chair and a chair being taken out of the group of people.
Well, I'm talking about the vice chair right now. I'm not trying to exchange them. I am talking about the vice chair at this moment.
Vice chair and chairs are, in my mind, the same in terms of roles and responsibilities, except that one answers to the other and is standing in background. But in terms of neutrality and positional, in terms of placement, I believe they have to operate in the same manner. Now,
all
that
right.
may just be my belief, but I think that's also what we documented in the guidelines.
Yeah, it's Liz. It's 6.1.3, Purpose, Importance, and Expectations of the Chair.
Can you read that?
Sure. The chair is expected to assume a neutral role, refrain from promoting a specific agenda, and ensure fair treatment of all opinions and objectivity in identifying areas of agreement. This does not mean that a chair experienced in the subject matter, should be matter, cannot express an opinion, but he or she should be explicit about the fact that a personal opinion or view is being stated instead of a ruling of the chair. However, a chair should not become an advocate for any specific position. The appointment of co-chairs could be considered as encouraged as a way to share the burden, provide continuity, and rotate their participation in the discussion. In addition to certain circumstances, the co-chair may the CO is the chartering organization may decide that it must appoint a completely neutral and independent chair who would not participate in the substance of the discussions. In such circumstances, the chair would be appointed by the chartering organization.
Yeah, and all that, I heard all that. All I heard was chair. Is that for the vice chair, too?
Oh, it's been my assumption that vice chair operates under the same rules as the chair.
That's what I'm trying to understand. Is it an assumption, or is this part of... I just want to understand. Is it...
There's something, something in the working group guidelines as well with regards to co-chairs and vice-chairs, but nothing with regards to any neutrality or what else. But it's just appointing, so the role of the vice-chair is appointing a co-chair or vice-chair may facilitate the work of the chair by ensuring continuity in case of absence, sharing of workload, and allowing the chair to become engaged in a particular debate. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. So my interpretation of that, unless I'm mistaken, is that in the case where the vice chair has to step into the chair's role, all those things that Liz just read are to be the case. If the vice chair is not able to because of a championing of it versus simply an opinion or what have you, then the vice chair would have the ability to say, "I'm sorry, I can't step in that role." But I don't see where what Liz just read applies to the vice chair directly. Even though I understand, Aubrey, that you believe it should, I'm just trying to understand. I'm trying to understand this.
I understand. I understand where it doesn't say it there explicitly.
Okay.
I
just want to make sure I'm doing things correctly.
I have to do the job.
All right. So I just want to make sure I'm doing things correctly. All right. I understand. All right, so I'm not prepared to accept your resignation yet.
I got that.
All right, based on what we just vetted out. Now, if that said, in 2 weeks, if you still feel strongly about wanting to resign, it will be accepted. And I hope that you choose not to. With that said, you know, we have some additional red lines here in this document that was sent today by Julie. We will not get to them today. It has to do with some language that has been suggested to us at our request. Again, getting to that list, which is a whole other hornet's nest for us to get into and discuss the list of contractors by ICANN and how it relates to what people can disclose as their statements of interest. So I suppose let's punt that one to the next call. We've got kind of our work cut out for us here between now and 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
I would ask, though, that you know, if it becomes for the next call, that we decide that we are going to tackle this issue of the language as it pertains to disclosure of interest being documented, and we decide, okay, we haven't found anything to say that we shouldn't be doing that, I want to make that a top priority so we can get that in front, you know, get that in front of the OSC and get in front of the GNSO Council. Okay. Mm-hmm. And by the way, either one of those two bodies could decline it on the basis of it wasn't our responsibility to do it. Either one of them. So just food for thought as well.
I should note I'm also on the OSC.
Good. You can fight the fight there too.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah,
and Aubrey, you'll be surprised. I respect you for it. Okay.
Ray, I just want to let you know, I did send around the language, the two different sets of language to this list. So, Aubrey, you'll have that for her call.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Chair, I
have
to apologize. I have a hard stop, and I've been kind of waiting for this to kind of to wind down.
We're wrapping up, Ron. Wrapping up right now. If there is no any other business, I'm going to ask that we adjourn the call and end the recording.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you,
folks. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you,
everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.